Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Power Is Now online radio. My name is Eric Lawrence Frazier, and I'm your host and executive producer of The Power Is Now. The phrase, The Power Is Now, suggests that we maximize our potential for success in business and life when we act on information and opportunities now. The present is our future because the future is only a reflection of past decisions to act now. Folks, we are at our best. We maximize our success when we act now. Has that been your life experience so far? It certainly has been mine. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. Today is show number 130. The Power Is Now Radio is a series of meetings designed to empower and inspire real estate agents to sell more homes, expand their business to buyers and sellers, and to be well-informed about changes in the world of real estate, finance, marketing, economics, government, and anything else that can help them be the best they can be as real estate professionals. Please email info@thepowerisnow.com or contact us by telephone at 1-800-401-8994, extension 702. And let us know what you think about the teleconference and how The Power Is Now can continue to support you in the real estate business. We appreciate the feedback and your suggested topics. And if you're listening to this call for the first time, please email info@thepowerisnow.com and write in the subject line, add me to your mailing list, and we will be happy to do so, so that you'll receive the weekly flyer promoting each speaker that's coming on the show. You can also go to thepowerisnow.com. That's thepowerisnow.com. And join the Power Is Now Network for free. That way you'll be able to listen to all the past calls of great speakers who've come on this show. Well, today, we are continuing our series on increasing your communication IQ for personal and professional success with T.S. Bergen. I highly recommend you listen to the show on intrapersonal communication, which is step one on the communication staircase model. T.S. began the show with defining intrapersonal communication and ended it with three great keys to transforming your intrapersonal communication. This was step two on the communication staircase model. And lastly, your three keys to transforming your mental messages, which is, in fact, intrapersonal communication.
Okay, well, let's look, go back to the definition. I think the one that you're referring to was the first definition I gave was the definition of communication itself. Making
right.
sure that our listeners take the time. If you've never done this in your life, now is the time. Whether you're 10, 20, 50, 70, if you've never taken the time to distinguish the biological functioning of talking from the intellectual functioning of communicating, it's never too late. So now is the time to do that. So I introduced a definition that I believe more aptly looks at communication as a science and not just something that happens in terms of biology. So the definition was, communication happens whenever meaning is attributed to behavior or the residue of behavior. Is that the one you're referring to, Eric?
That is exactly it.
Okay, so communication happens whenever meaning is attributed to behavior or the residue of behavior. And the reason that I choose that as opposed to, let's say, simply saying the exchange of messages. Well, when you boil communication down to just the exchange of messages, you leave out a couple of very vital steps. the intrust step, communicating with yourself, and the nonverbal step, how you present yourself to the outside world. And all of that process is very internalized, that becomes an external experience. And then the other part of that definition was the whole issue of residue. And remember, we talked about not being a resident of negative residue.
Right, I love that.
And remember, and that negative residue, which most of us like to chew on. I mean, you know, sometimes I bring up the analogy of a cow and how a cow has a stomach that receives food and a stomach that regurgitates its food. And, you know, it talks about chewing on that food consistently. You know, they have a different type of system than we do. Well, we don't necessarily do that physically, but we do it mentally. And we have to be aware of the quote-unquote regurgitation of our thoughts that I tried to make pretty salient with the well example that you brought up. You are the well. The water in the well is your mind, thoughts, experiences, memories. The bucket that you dump into that well is what you pull up on a moment-to-moment basis while you're thinking, daydreaming, talking to yourself, muttering under your breath, you know, any number of self-talk experiences that we have. So, you know, yesterday we talked about that definition of communication. We brought that definition to the first step, which is intrapersonal, which is simply talking to yourself. The bigger question became not the fact that you talk to yourself, hello, we all do, all 7 billion of us talk to ourselves. The question is, what are you saying to yourself? And how are you saying those things to yourself? And then we start to realize that we can live our lives on purpose. We can think on purpose. We can think intentionally. We can cast down those thoughts that do not advance the vision that we have for our lives, the vision that we have for our children, the vision that we have for our profession, for our marriage, even for the vision that we have of our patrons buying and selling through us property, real estate, home. You know, you have to have that vision in your mind, even for that person that you're trying to sell to or buy from, because without that vision, you won't give off the energy that will actually bring you to the fruition of success, you know, that self-success. So what we come to understand is that we can think on purpose, we can think intentionally, as opposed to the law of attraction in my business. We call it the law of deliberate action. I am deliberately choosing my thoughts. I'm deliberately choosing which thoughts will remain with me, that I will continue to ponder, think about. And those thoughts should all be a projectile to where I see myself going. That is a really important key. So we end the evening with three keys of how to improve your intrapersonal communication, those three keys that you just brought up.
Right.
And again, listeners, go back to the interview yesterday, and you're going to get a whole hour, I think, plus of that discussion. But the three keys were brought forward at the end of the discussion, and we talk about the three selves. The three selves, kind of think of your body as an entity that can program, you know, that old saying, mind over matter. Well, this is what it is. This is mind over matter. You know, when you're hungry, when your stomach says, I'm hungry, if you know you're not really hungry, or if you know you don't want to eat, or you shouldn't eat, you tell your stomach to be quiet. Or if you're feeling nervous about something, you tell your body to calm down. So your mind really does have mastery over the rest of your body, but too often we give into those other feelings or situations or circumstances that will try to take precedence over what we know to be true. And what is truth? Truth is how we define it and establish it for ourselves. And the morals, a philosophy, an attitude of life that we want to adopt. So those three selves are: one, self-monitor. Think about what you're thinking about. Metacognition. Catch a thought. Thoughts are mental units of energy. Catch it. See if it's something that you want to stay with. When you catch it, or once you self-monitor and you're aware of your thinking mode, obviously it's easier to do it by yourself. Obviously, it's easier to do it when you're in moments of silence. You don't have a lot of distractions. But listen to me when I say that the best time to self-monitor is when you're engaged in conversation. Because if you don't self-monitor during the process of responding to other people, all you do is react viscerally. And sometimes right. those visceral reactions come up as anger, envy, despair, these kinds of things, as opposed to responding in the truth that you know to be true. So you self-monitor, you catch that thought, and then you reflect on it. And the question of reflection, self-reflection is number two, self-monitor, one, self-reflection, two, is to ask yourself, do I want to see that thought manifest? Do I want that thought to turn into an action in my life, my profession, my career, this sale that I'm getting ready to go into, this meeting that I'm getting ready to have, this mm-hmm. interview that I'm getting ready to right. go into? Eric, so many people fail the interview process because they talk themselves into the failure before they even get there.
Oh, my goodness.
You know it, right?
Yeah,
and the thing that's so interesting to me, and I tell this all the time to people when I do workshops on interviewing strategies, is that if you've been called in for an interview, celebrate. Go
right.
out and celebrate. Because
right.
they have to weed through quite a few people to get down to those special few that made the impression that they were looking for on paper.
Right.
Now, all they want to happen is for those 10 interviewees to come in, and they'd like 9 of you to interview, to communicate yourself out of the position, and they
right.
want one person to communicate themselves
into,
the position. Right? And it all starts
right.
with you, with your mental processes, that psychological preparation that you need to engage in every time you're getting ready to make a quote-unquote sale.
That's
when you're getting ready to share. And say that again?
That's the same thing with presentations, isn't it? And a realtor
yeah.
is going to make a presentation to take a listing, and the seller is looking for them to sell them as to why they should use them. And that negative self-talk can really impact them, their ability to perform at their best in that interview.
Exactly right, because people feel you before they hear you. Yes, they do. They feel you before they hear you. You know what an atmosphere feels like. You know what a vibe is. You know what
mm-hmm.
energy is. And a lot
okay.
of times, you know, we have to express these things in very metaphysical ways that sometimes others get put off by. But the reality is, when we talk about science is much more than just what you can see, feel, and touch. Otherwise,
right.
we would not believe in the science and the mathematics of this great universe that we live in. You know,
right.
we don't know who's behind the curtains per se, but we know that there's something behind the curtain. And so we, in faith and trust, continue to act on that. So when we're in that part of self-reflection, we're asking ourselves, do I really want to see this happen? And then once I make that determination, step number three of the three selves is self-adjust. I adjust to speak it because I want to see it, or I adjust to keep my mouth shut, don't say it, reframe what I'm getting ready to say, postpone what I'm getting ready to say, whatever
right.
it is that you think would be helpful. Notice I use the word helpful, healthy to the current communication experience. So, and this is when you're with yourself, and this is when you're with other people. A lot of people talk out loud about themselves in negative ways. They'll look in the mirror and they'll say, oh, my God, look at me, you know, or any number of ways that we even openly express negativity towards ourselves, which makes it so much easier to express negativity towards other people. So self-monitor, self-reflect, self-adjust, because we can change the way we think. We can be transformed by the renewing of our minds. This is the first homework, to know thyself. And once I know myself, I know my shortcomings, I know my strengths, I know those hot button issues for me. I have to prepare myself ahead of time. I have to have a plan, like you were saying a minute ago, that psychological preparation. I envision that sale from front to back. I envision that discussion from beginning to end. I've actually seen it in my head. All I'm doing is adding the probability that the outcome will be in my favor as I join mind, body, spirit, soul, all of it together, uniting around the outcome that I want to see, which hopefully is a win-win for everybody involved. So that takes us to step number two.
Wow. What a great review. And folks, I don't know about you, but you should get on the phone right now and call somebody and tell them to listen to The Power Is Now, right now, before we get into step two, nonverbal communication. In fact, I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that. We're going to go to a commercial break, and after that commercial break, we'll be right back to talk about step two in the communication staircase, nonverbal communication.
Hello, everybody. This is Eric Frazier, host of The Power Is Now. Great things are happening in Orange County, California, Friday, May 18th, 2012, at National University from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and listen to Anna Gonzalez, Community Affairs Loan Relations Manager for U.S. Bank. She's going to be talking about short sale opportunities with U.S. Bank. Also, their loan consultant will be there, Adriana Galaviz, with U.S. Bank Home Mortgage, and she's going to be talking about special loan programs for assets with U.S. Bank. And then we'll have Amelia Castro, REO Asset Recovery Manager with the REO and Short Sales Department with Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. I would recommend you come down to the Orange County Realtors at National University Friday, May 18th, 2012 from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The address is 3390 Harbor Boulevard, Costa Mesa, and it's free for everyone. Limited seating, registration is required. Just go to ocrealtors.org or contact Orange County Realtors at ocrealtors.org. On June 13th, the Orange County Realtors is going to be kicking off their golf classic as well as the NARAP Region 15 Conference. So on June 13th, at the Bella Colima Town and Golf Club, we're having our first ever golf classic, and it's going to be an exciting event at a fabulous golf course. It's at Bella Colima Town and Golf Club, 200 Avenida La Plata, San Clemente, California. Registration's at 8 a.m., and the golf tournament begins at 9 a.m. in the morning, lunch from 1 p.m., and awards and prizes will be at 2:30 p.m. For an individual golfer, it's only $150. Twosomes, $300. Foursomes, $600. And there are sponsorship opportunities available. Go to ocrealtors.org for more information and register to participate on this great Orange County Realtors Golf Classic. Following the Orange County Realtors Golf Classic is NARAP's Region 15 Conference. Communicate to dominate, June 14th and June 15th at the Sheraton Park Hotel at 1855 South Harbor Boulevard in Anaheim, California. drive your business to more profits and success. Region 15 Conference presents Communicate to Build Your Investor Business. Rev up your revenue sources with property management. Add income from corporate and social services. Dominate with your brand and social media. Increase REO and short sale commissions and many other topics. Dominate your market and register now. Just go to ocrealtist.org for more information. Standard registration to May 28th. Members $199. Non-members $300. Late registration, members $235. Non-members $350. Registration includes conference attendance, continental breakfast Thursday and Friday, three-course luncheon Thursday and Friday, three-course dinner Thursday, and entertainment and dancing. There will also be a talent show contest with prizes and, of course, the pre-conference golf tournament, which is Wednesday. Folks, the Region 15 Conference, Communicate to Dominate, is only 5 minutes from the happiest place on earth, Disneyland. That's right, it's going to be at the Sheraton Park Hotel, 1855 South Harbor Boulevard, Anaheim, California. Please come out and take advantage of this wonderful opportunity to learn how to build your investor business and rev up your revenue sources with property management and much more. Drive your business to more profits and success with the Communicate to Dominate NARAB Region 15 Conference. We hope to see you there. Talk to you soon.
Okay, we're back with P.S. Perkins. And I tell you, P.S., I'm really enjoying this. Your review of just step one, in fact, we did a whole hour. You just did a review in about 10 minutes, and that's enough, I think, for all of us just to chew on and really just take to heart and just really internalize this information, because it's all going to make us much better communicators. Now, nonverbal communication, I just can't imagine what you have to say about that. And folks, if you're looking at the outline from the flyer you received, she's going to dive in with defining again nonverbal communications as she defined intrapersonal communication. So let's go, PS, nonverbal communication.
Okay, thank you. Well, I started yesterday with a question for you, Eric, and I'm going to start again with another question for you. Since you're my only live student, so you have to do all the homework for everybody else. When you hear the word nonverbal communication, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Appearance. How you're looking. Yes, yeah. I mean, a frown, a smile, your hands on your hips. Those kinds of things. That's what I picture when I think of nonverbal communications.
And what you just shared with me is basically in line with what most people say. The first thing that people generally say, well, nonverbal communication to me is body language. And yes, it is. As a matter of fact, it's one of the primary areas of nonverbal communication. And Eric, I think everything that you said a second ago had something to do with body language. But I'm going to add six other variables to that that pretty much have nothing to do with body language, but everything to do with how you're communicating with people beyond your words. And this is a really exciting segment. We're going to do it kind of short and succinct, but it's an area that I would suggest people spend a lot more time focusing on for a lot of different reasons, and I think once we get through today, you'll understand how much homework, personal homework, you need to do in this one vital area. We've gone from our intra, and now we're taking that intra. Just think about it. I'm taking my self-esteem, my self-worth, how I see myself, how I feel about myself, how I regard myself in comparison to other people. I'm taking all of that and dressing it up in me. And I'm presenting that as a package to the world. You know, I'm presenting it as a package to the world that I use and that I give to people. So let me start with the definition first. And that definition is, ready?
Okay.
I know you're ready. Okay. That definition is nonverbal communication is the conscious and or subconscious transmission and reception of unspoken messages. The conscious and or subconscious transmission and reception of unspoken messages. Now, I could have just said, okay, communicating without words. But it obviously from the definition, we see that there are things that we're doing on a very conscious level, such as appearance. That was one thing that you mentioned appearance, and then you moved on to kinesics. But appearance is something that we generally are aware of. We're aware of the perfumes and the colognes that we wear and the Gucci, Pucci, LaRucci that we carry. And, you know, a lot of this we're doing intentional because we're trying to manage the impression that other people have of us, interestingly enough. So a lot of this we're aware of, but then what about those things that we're not so aware of? Such as, for instance, a lot of people don't know what they sound like. They have an impression of their voice, but I remember the first time I heard my voice, I was like, oh no, that's not me, that's my mom, or that's some cartoon character or something, I don't know what, you know, but my first impression was, wow, that can't be me, because you have a false sense of how you sound because the reverberation in your head is different than what is coming out of your mouth that is other people are listening to. So, so we call that our paralanguage. Most people are not aware of their paralanguage. A lot of times people are not say that paralanguage. Para. Para as in P-A-R-A,
okay.
Language, one word. And I'm going to come back to that in a second, but I'm just talking about a few things that we're not even aware of often. You know, the conscious and or subconscious. People aren't aware of their posture. Oftentimes, you mentioned hands on your hips a minute ago. People aren't aware of this. And so it's time for us to be more connected with those messages that people are actually receiving before we even say anything, and oftentimes substituting those nonverbal messages for the things coming out of our mouth. And it's incredible. So the conscious and or subconscious transmission and reception, so it's something that you send and something that you receive of unspoken messages. So that's the definition that I'd like to share. And again, let me preface this. All of these definitions are definitions that I've learned over the years from a variety of practitioners. Some of them I've tweaked. Some of them I've changed. Some of them I've stayed with. Some of them I've even discarded. But you can imagine, as with any discipline, there are a lot of people that have written about the discipline, have studied and researched the discipline. So I'm offering you my particular take on the discipline, not to negate how anybody else defines these tools. But we're pretty much all on the same page.
Right.
So we have the definition. Now let me say this very quickly. Or really importantly, nonverbal communication is culturally bound. It's culturally bound. By that, I mean it changes from culture to culture to culture, just like verbal language.
Okay.
Just like your verbal language. So one of the mistakes that we often make as people, as individuals, as humans, one of the mistakes that we often make is that we assume everybody is doing the same thing. You know, everybody has the same type of eye contact, or everybody has the, let's say, the same way that they deal with space, or that they even have the same proclivities towards smell. Nothing can be farther from the truth. For those of us that travel globally, we know what it's like to run into different paradigms around our nonverbal communication. It could be the way that people greet one another. It could be the things people are eating, et cetera. But our job is to make sure that we don't carry a sense of ethnocentrism. In other words, our way is the only way. Our thoughts are the only thoughts. Our language is the only thing, language, or whatever it happens to be. And again, it's not that we shouldn't be proud to be Americans or to be Pakistanis or to be any number of groups that populate our planet, but we need to understand that culture is about your family, it's about your community, it's about your society. And so just like we have different languages, whether it's Farsi, whether it's English, whether it's German, whether it's Swahili, whether it's French, whether it's Spanish, we also have different ways that we communicate nonverbally. So I'm saying that to say everything that I speak on today, specifically unless I refer to another culture, has to do more with the way that we communicate nonverbally here in the United States.
Okay.
So the first thing that I want to, the next thing after the definition, I think everybody's clear about the definition.
Great definition.
Thank you. And we're clear that it's culturally bound. I don't expect to see myself and my nonverbal habits everywhere I travel around the world.
Right.
But I do understand that just like I've been taught how to speak a language from a child, I've also been taught from a child as to what is appropriate and what is inappropriate nonverbal behavior. And it's very interesting because depending on your clan, your clique, your tribe, your community, that can even change from street to street, from neighborhood to neighborhood, from the southern United States to the northern United States to the west coast to the east coast, and all of us can kind of say, yeah, that sounds true.
Right.
Now, let me give you an interesting statistic to show your audience or to share with your audience just how big this issue is called or this area of communication is. Many years ago, there was a man named Albert Mehrabian, and I'm not sure if Mr. Mehrabian is still with us, but he was at that time being quoted as Professor Emeritus at UCLA, and he came up with what they call the Mehrabian statistic, and it's still quoted today. I think this was back in the 60s, and it's still quoted and used today, even though there are varying degrees of the statistic. But the statistic says this, and I'm paraphrasing, 93% of your trust, your believability, your communication, connection with other people come from your nonverbal communication. 93% of your communication with another individual in terms of sincerity, believability, status, all of those things comes not from what you say, but how you say what you say. And when, if we break that 93% down, according to Mr. Mehrabian, we're looking at 55% visual and 38% vocal. 55% visual and 38% vocal equals 93, which means, do our math really quick, we only have 7% of that message that people are really, really gleaning from the words we speak.
Wow.
In other words, Eric, people pay more attention to what they see and how they're hearing you as opposed to what you're actually saying. And this is a huge issue because I think with our nonverbal communication, we're so into expressing ourselves individually, even though, you know, a lot of us copycat other people and other situations. But, you know, we look at ourselves as individuals, and so this is how I want to express myself with this hairstyle, with this hair color, with this tattoo, with this piercing, with the way I'm wearing my pants, with the fact, you know, fill in the blank.
Right.
So that visual message and that vocal message is very vital to how people are responding to you. So now that statistic is, some people would say, very inflated. I personally believe it is high, but not so much inflated, because I think we've lived long enough and we've experienced the human responses that we have between ourselves to know that actions do speak louder than words.
That's an old saying, isn't it?
And a picture is worth a thousand words.
I was just thinking that.
So, you know, we know these things, but how have we equipped ourselves to be able to really use this communication step in a manner that advances the impression that we want people to have of us? So let me introduce just a couple of functions. You know, why do we use nonverbal communication? Well, some people use nonverbal communication to contradict themselves. They say one thing and they do another.
I know some people like that.
I know some people like that too. And I have to raise my hand and say, hey, there have been times in my life when I've sent contradictory messages.
Mm-hmm.
I might have spoken and said that I was confident, but I did things that did not show my confidence.
Sure.
I might have acted like I trusted X, Y, and Z, but then the way, or said that I trusted X, Y, and Z, but the way that I acted was different. And so many of us send contradictory messages, some on purpose, unfortunately, and some just because they don't have their mind, their intentions, all of that isn't synced to where they can be authentic, live honestly, live in their integrity. So, I mean, we just have to face the fact that because of human nature, there are people that are going to send contradictory messages. Now, for you, the real estate professional, what are the contradictory messages that you might be sending out to your clients in terms of meeting them on time, being where you're saying you're going to be, having the paperwork that you say you're going to have ready, meeting these deadlines, meeting expectations very often, and sometimes not because we intend to do that or be that way. It just sometimes happens. But when it happens, we have to be quick to try to make sure that our verbal and our nonverbal are congruent, because that's what we're aiming for, congruency in the verbal and the nonverbal message.
Well, you're just walking down Real Estate Avenue, aren't you?
Right, exactly. And we know that integrity is a big area of real estate. Integrity and making sure that what you say is what you do.
Right.
Another function of nonverbal communication is substituting. You know, sometimes we just substitute lots of ways that we communicate nonverbally for words. For instance, if I wear a Rolex watch, I don't necessarily have to tell you that I have money. You see it.
Mm-hmm.
If I live in a big house, I don't necessarily have to tell you that I'm pretty well off. You see it.
Right.
You know, if you approach me and I back away from you, you get a message immediately that I don't want you in my space.
Right.
You see, or if I can't quite, I'm not too close to you, but I see you and you see me and we wave at each other, then we again have exchanged the message of greeting without words.
Right.
So we have contradicting, we have substitution. Sometimes we use it to compliment. In other words, I say, hello, Eric, how you doing? And we give each other a hug. Or, again, if I compliment the words that I speak with my nonverbal communication, when we deal with public speaking, we know that we try to use our body language in terms of our gestures,
right,
eye contact, these types of things to compliment what we're saying. Right?
You're right.
So we have these three functions: contradicting, substituting, complimenting. But the last two that I want to bring up are quite important to the real estate professional, and that is that nonverbal communication is best used amongst humans for managing impressions and establishing relationships. And what could be bigger than managing impressions and establishing relationships to the real estate professional? And the core of how you establish those relationships, more than the verbal messages, are the nonverbal messages that need to be as consistent as your verbal message. So managing impressions, establishing relationships, keep that in the forefront of your mind as we somewhat quickly look at a few of these areas of nonverbal communication. So you mentioned appearance, and I think many of us as professionals, we understand the difference between professional wear and social wear. We understand, and I've met you personally, Eric, so I know that you take your personal appearance very seriously. Mm-hmm. You're one of those guys that we used to say, you know, you're a dapper dresser. You're very dapper. You know, you put yourself together well in a way that represents the philosophy of life, not only for yourself, mm-hmm. but for people that you're dealing with. You want to give hope and inspiration to people. And it's not that you can't be relaxed in jeans. It's not that you can't have a. But even being relaxed in jeans with a nice white crisp shirt is saying one thing versus some other type of wear that may say something else.
Right. Well, thank you so much for that,
Pia. You're welcome. I'm sure I'm not the only one, including your wife, that thinks that. So your appearance is very important, and of course, as professionals, we always want to go out, and sometimes this may require the help of a stylist, whether it's makeup, whether it's hair, whether it's color choices for our skin tones. I know myself, as an African-American, we tend to dress in manners that where we love to embrace the color in the way that we express ourselves. Mm-hmm. And our men, as well as women, will sometimes go outside of the box, and when I say outside of the box of the dominant culture, in terms of how we may appear in terms of the way that we dress. Okay. And it's up for, you know what I mean?
I know what you're talking about.
Yes, okay. And so you know how we coordinate. You know?
Coordinate, I got it.
We coordinate,
yes.
You know, from head to toe.
Right.
And in our communities, we look at this as being very, very fashionable,
right.
And very appealing. But this is the issue. It may not translate everywhere we go.
Right.
And if we decide to represent ourselves in that way anyway, we need to be ready for the fact that everyone may not receive it in the manner that we intended for it to be received, and that's just a part of your own individuality. I mean, we're not cookie cutters, and oftentimes we work in environments where people expect to see the cookie cutter, and they'll even let you know. You know, we dress in blue suits, or we expect men to have no facial hair, or all of our representatives must wear makeup and lipstick. You know, I mean, we have people that have gone to that extent to mandate the appearance environment of their organization. Okay.
Sure.
I understand that, and we need to be able to do that as needful. The point with appearance is just, you know, make sure that you're representing the level of success you want people to be attracted to in terms of them putting their trust in you to take them to their next dream level, that ability to sell that home, that ability to buy that home, that property. After we look at appearance, and again, maybe what will happen is some of your audience members will call in with specific questions
mm-hmm.
or email you specific questions about these areas, because I'm just going to go through them. And of course, we've already talked about doing some workshops and seminars later where we can really get into the meat of some of this stuff.
Absolutely. In fact, on that note, T.S., if you're listening online right now, just go into the chat room and put your question there, and I'll make sure that we get it and that PS addresses it either directly, or we'll bring it up perhaps in the next call with the questions that I may receive from all of you.
Yeah, and I do want to say, Eric, if we get very overwhelmed, which would be wonderful, then you can send those questions to me directly, and then I can answer them, you know, from my own environment. As I have the time to do that, and I would love to be able to respond to each and every one of your listeners. The next area that I would like to bring up is paralanguage, and paralanguage is a very, very important area for the professional, real estate professional. The paralanguage is at 38% we just mentioned earlier, the vocalics. So what do you mean? Paralanguage, what is that? Well, it's pitch. It's tone. Hmm. It's pacing, how fast or how slow you speak. It's emphasis. It's stress. It's loudness versus softness. It's projection. We know about these things, but we may not have had a word such as paralanguage or vocalics to understand what it is that we may need to work on and adjust. The thing that's so beautiful about nonverbal communication is that it can change. You can change your appearance. You can even change the way you sound. And if I wasn't on the radio, I would probably try to vary my voice a little bit so your audience could hear it, but I don't want to lose anybody. But, I mean, you know, you can create whatever kind of voice you want to. I can go very low with my voice, right, or I can go really high with my voice, right, which I won't attempt to do again, but you get it, right? And notice how those differences of pitch can affect the way someone receives your message.
You're right.
Or if you have or whatever type of accent you're working with, because I do want to clarify for all of your listening audience, everybody on the planet has an accent.
Right.
Everybody works with a particular dialect.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the culture, some accents and dialects are preferable to the dominant culture, and some accents and dialects are not as preferable. So just do yourself a favor and look at the news tonight. Look at your local TV station and listen to the voices and notice how similar the accents are, because most of them have adopted a general American accent and dialect, which is the one that we, as U.S. Americans, have given a stamp of approval to. But you notice how in the major networks, the major talk shows, for the most part, you do not hear the heavy Southern accent. You do not hear the Texas accents. You do not hear the South Boston accents. Now, you go to their local TV stations and you hear it.
Right.
But you don't expect to pull that up maybe necessarily where you are if it's not in any of those areas. Because we've been taught very subtly but very clearly, what is the accent that sounds intelligent? Mm. What is the accent that is preferable?
Wow.
What is the accent that is educated? And even in our thought processes, when people are talking to us, we are assessing them on those levels based on the way that they sound.
Wow.
And this is, again, one of the reasons why your professionals want to think about the way that they present themselves. And it's not that a Southern accent is bad. I have a Southern accent when I choose to use it. I used to have a New York accent that I occasionally use. I've pretty much gotten myself into the general American accent. A lot of that is because of the way that I move around.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of my work, however, no one should be ashamed or in any kind of way try to diminish not only their accent but their dialect, whether that dialect is Patois, Gullah from the coast of South Carolina, the Tangierman in Virginia, the Dutch in Pennsylvania, the Swedish people of the Midwest. All of these accents, we have somewhere around maybe 800 dialects in the United States, but we tend not to hear many of them, and as a result, we keep favoring certain types of accents. And that's a whole other discussion, but let's suffice it to say, the clarity of your voice, your diction, your pronunciation that should be regional, your diction that should be clear, your pacing that should be in alignment with the pacing of those people around you. Your paralanguage is very regional. It's very cultural. It's almost like when in Rome, do as the Romans. And then my second part of that is when at home, do as the homies. So when in Rome, do as the Romans. We'll let home do as the homies. And be okay with that. I'm very okay with the fact that I have an Ebonic dialect that I use in appropriate settings.
You did not just go there, did you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Just like my Spanish. Exactly. Just like my Spanglish listeners, my Yiddish listeners, and everybody else goes there as they are entitled to, because this is something very important. You know yourself in the language. You know your customs, your traditions, your norms, your celebrations. You know yourself in the language. When you use your language, you lose a big part of your identity. And then you have to continue to redefine yourself and refashion yourself every so often, as some peoples have had to do here in the United States. Some by choice and some by force. But again, that's a different discussion. Your paralanguage is something that you can adjust. However, don't think that there's anything wrong with the way that you communicate now, as long as you're communicating effectively. You just have to know how to, what we call, code switch. They call it a variety of things, but I'm just going to use a simple word, code switch. When I move into professional settings, I switch on my professional communication that is more in line with the dominant culture. And as I am speaking to you right now, for the most part. So I'm being very clear, and I'm hearing myself. I'm listening to myself as I do this, and so I can hear the endings of my words. I can listen for elongated vowels, crisp consonants, and so that keeps me on top of my game because I'm listening to myself. I switched into the environment. Please remember this, listeners. Communication is appropriate or inappropriate, not necessarily good or bad. You may have good or bad outcomes.
Right.
But in terms of communication, it's appropriate or inappropriate. Language, in terms of language, syntax, grammar, phonology, these types of things, language can be looked at as good or bad in terms of am I writing a good English sentence or a good French sentence or Spanish sentence for its syntax, for its structure. Mm-hmm. But when we start to communicate, when I'm trying to relate to you, where you are on your level, then I'm going to come to where you are as much as I can. I'm not trying to be a phony. I'm not trying to do something that I'm not. But I am broadening the ability for me to communicate across boundaries. And I don't expect to always hear myself when other people are speaking back to me. That would be highly ethnocentric for me to do that, and to penalize people because they don't sound like me or look like me. And again, you know, many, many cultures have a history of doing that. This is one way that we maintain certain power structures. And so it's just for your listening audience to know that they can improve their paralanguage to the extent that they feel that they need to. Not because someone else tells them that they have to. But again, we're all competing. And so this is, I wanted to spend a few minutes there because it's important. Another area that I'd like to go to is kinesics. And kinesics is what most people think about when they think about body language. Eye contact, posture, stance, walk, all of those things that have to do with the physical body. So let me just say to your listeners, please, mind, body, mouth have to come together. One of the major drawbacks, one of the major pitfalls that I often see when dealing with teaching public speaking and public presentation is that the mouth says one thing, the mind is off on another tangent, probably fear, and the body is responding to what you're thinking. So there's nervous tension, there's shaking, there's swaying back and forth, there's crossing the legs, there's trying to placate yourself or make you feel comfortable by rubbing certain body parts, you know, like your arms or your hands or fidgeting with rings. So that whole kinesic energy, when you're in front of a client, you want to exhibit an attitude of confidence in your body. You want to express with your hands. You want to have direct eye contact. And if you come from a culture where direct eye contact is not appropriate, again, when in Rome, do as the Romans. Here in the United States, eye contact is akin to sincerity and honesty. And when you don't use direct eye contact in a comfortable manner, people will label you as dishonest.
Right.
And so we have to make sure that that kinesthetic energy, our gestures, the way we stand, our posture, the way we walk into a room will tell an individual whether you're walking in a power walk or are you walking in timidity, afraid, not sure how this is going to work out. You need to work out. You need to know that it's going to work out just great for everyone involved, and your body language needs to say that. Your kinesic energy needs to exude that. So we've had appearance, we've had paralanguage, we've had kinesics. Another area that I'd like to touch on quickly, because there are seven, and I won't cover all of them tonight, but the one that I'd like to end with is proxemics in terms of developing it. And the other two I'll just mention, other three I'll just mention as we leave. But proxemics refers to space.
Okay.
Space, how we use space, how we connect with one another spatially in terms of distance, and artifacts. It goes as far as artifacts and objects. So when a client walks into your office, what do they see? When they sit down and look at your desk, what do they see?
Oh, my goodness.
When you open your briefcase at the table of that client's home,
all right,
what falls out?
Right. Well, you're walking down Fraser Avenue right now.
Exactly, right? Yes. I understand it, because many of us sometimes are not aware in our hurriedness that people are checking these things out. They're checking out, just like they check out your appearance, they check out, you know, taking that a step further in terms of artifacts. You know, what kind of briefcase are you carrying? How old is it? How run down does it look? What about the shoe quality? Are you already need to get those heels replaced? Or,
right.
You know, what is going on in terms of just your artifacts that you, the glasses that you're wearing, you know? Is one piece taped together to the, to the other side of the glasses? Even your artifacts say something to people. And, of course, we know that. Let's go back to what we're doing here, managing impressions.
Right.
Why would you spend $10,000 on that watch if you weren't trying to manage an impression?
This is true.
When a Timex would do. You know, and again, I don't mean to put down watches or anything, but you get the point, right? You know, why would you buy Armani or Gucci or these other designer bags and watches and shoes and clothes and suits, unless we really were not into managing the impressions that other people have of us? So our proxemics, in terms of not just how we use space, but what our artifacts and objects say about us. And so I think this is something, you know, just really quickly, what I would love to see if a real estate professional came into my home, they open up their briefcase, and that particular briefcase is dedicated to me. It looks like it's all about me.
Okay.
When they take that folder out, my name is on it.
Right.
You know, when they open up their iPads or their iPhones or whatever, I'm seeing them engage in, you know, taking me to the next meeting or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
So when I walk into the environment, I've actually tailored it down so that my nonverbal communication is all about you, the client. And I don't look like I'm just running hurriedly from one interview to the next, from one meeting to the next, from one sale to the next, and you just happen to be a byproduct of all this stuff that's happening in my life.
Right.
So I think we would do good to, you know, just make sure that we're a little bit careful about those things that we have with us, the type of pens that we write with, et cetera. And again, I know this sounds a little nitpicky, but this is the world that we live in. People are constantly assessing whether or not they want to do business with us based on what they're seeing from us. In addition to that, those artifacts, again, that space, how are you handling your space? If you're going to drive a client to show a property, are they getting into your car? And what does that look like?
Right.
What does it smell like? You know? And so you're like, wow, okay, that's something to think about. It really is.
If you have to say, excuse the mess, that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't want to have to say, excuse the mess.
Right.
You just don't. Not in your line of business.
Hmm.
So you borrow your friend's car, or you rent something, or you say too politely, can we take your car?
Right.
You know, whatever it is that you need to do. The last thing about proxy mix, however, and again, remember the culture thing, people deal with space a lot differently. People deal with space a lot differently in terms of how close or how far, the proximity that they have with other people. Are you dealing with people from other cultures, let's say Mexican culture, where proxemics or spatial relationships are usually closer? Middle Easterners talk and connect with each other closer in terms of spatial relationships. And as Americans, we tend to keep a very respectful distance from people we don't know.
Mm.
And we tend to be put off guard when people close in on us that we don't know.
Right.
So you have to be careful about being caught off guard by people's lack of knowledge in terms of knowing what that means here. Because even if we go into as we move into these various communities, remember, people have brought their cultures with them. And many of them are still living in those cultural norms, which means that I see space a certain way. I'm just going to bring this up really quickly. It was so interesting. I was looking at an Oprah show last night, and so this will kind of date us a little bit, but she was visiting India, and I think her show is now chronicling her visit to India. And it was so funny because she'd chosen two families to go into their homes, one from our standards very impoverished, and one even from our standards very rich.
Okay.
And one of the things that she said in her commentary, her voiceover of the experience, was that she walked into the impoverished family's home. It was, I think it was three girls and a mother and a father. And she said, they brought me into their home. Now, they're living in what would be considered a slum from our standpoint,
right.
Much more than what we've ever imagined in our own country. I've been to a few out of the country, so I know the level that she was experiencing. And she walked into this space, and she expected them to kind of give her a tour of their home. But she walked into the space, and that was it. And it was the size of probably most of our bathrooms or less. It was definitely smaller than my bathroom, probably three times smaller than my bathroom was the room that this family cooked in, ate in, lived in, did homework in, raised children in, everything. She was in shock. And she kept asking them, trying to find ways to ask them. She just couldn't wrap her head around it. Well, how do you sleep? And the young girl was pointing out the positions that they take on the floor that turns into a place where they eat, that turns into a place that they do homework. So we have some very interesting ways of looking at space and thinking about space, but one thing that we'll remember and we know, in the United States particularly, space denotes power.
Hmm.
It denotes power, and that's why we're so busy trying to get into that 3,500 or more square foot home.
Sure.
And have, you know, though that, you know, four-car garage, two-car garage isn't enough anymore.
Right.
And so what does this mean to my client? I know that you know that space is important, and space means power in this particular country. And how, as a real estate professional, does that help me to understand your relationship to this space? And do I know enough about your culture to know where you've come from and how you may look at space? Or the fact that you're getting this space, but in this space, you're going to have three families living, not one. And, I've run into this many times when I lived in New York. I visited Spanish Harlem several times. I lived in Harlem and visited Spanish Harlem, one right there with the other. And my first experience with Hispanic people at that time, mainly Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, as I would go into their homes to visit with them, they were my friends, I worked with their children, et cetera, I would be shocked at how many people were living there. In addition to, there were a lot of people, and I was like, wow, how can you all do this? Well, they knew that they were doing it for a purpose. There was a purpose of why they were doing what it was that they were doing, and that was to give everybody that opportunity of home ownership and to make sure that they could parlay that advantage onto another home or another home or another home. And so it was like really, it's really interesting how we look at space and deal with space, and the fact that we don't understand that space is very, very cultural. And so the issue of proxemics is very, very, I just think so interesting, just in terms of how we deal with space, how we deal with people in our space, what does that mean to us culturally? You know, so just chew on that for a minute and, you know, listening audience, look it up. You know the word proximity.
Right.
So just put in proxemics, P-R-O-X-E-M-I-C-S, proxemics, and look at all the different ways that we understand space. I mean, Eric, just think about zip code. Just think about the prefix of a phone number. You know how much you individuals as professionals work with zip codes?
Right.
And as soon as someone says a zip code in your area, you know exactly what the quality of the properties are in that area.
Yeah, you're right.
And you know exactly who and how you have to pitch that particular property.
Wow.
Because of where it's placed, who lives there, how they're living. All of this is nonverbal communication. This is an area that real estate professionals really need to sink their teeth into. How many real estate professionals niche themselves with those people that they're comfortable with? And how far is that going to take you? Eventually, you're going to have to expand. Eventually, you're going to have to enter the global community that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
The United States definitely is a conglomeration of many, many peoples. As a result, at some point, the real estate professional is going to run into people that have different points of view, obviously, different cultural backgrounds, even different languages that have to be navigated. So are you just going to close yourself off to what is comfortable and what is familiar,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to really become a global citizen, become a real estate professional that is ready to tackle a global market, which you can easily start with right in your own backyard. If you would just do a little bit of homework, first on yourself, in terms of what are your intrapersonal messages, what are your boxes and stereotypes and categories that you have for people, and how willing are you to come out of those boxes, those stereotypes, those categories, to really do justice to the individual that is looking to exercise or participate in the American dream just like the next person. And so I think, again, these areas of appearance, paralanguage, kinesics, proxemics, all of them nonverbal, have a lot to do with how you're engaging your clients. The other three areas that I won't take any time to talk about now, but please invite me back for another segment later on, or let's do a workshop. One of those is chronemics, and chronemics relates to time.
Hmm.
How we use time as a nonverbal code. Man, this one just blew me out of the water when I found out, when I realized that different cultures look at time and handle time differently. And then I started to create an assessment of the history of industrialism and technological histories and agricultural histories and where people are and who's considered third world and who's first world, and I don't know if there is a second world, and all of these paradigms that we've created around something called time. Well, how does that relate to time? Well, first world is considered the people that are the technological giants of the world.
Okay.
You know, and the way that we have adjusted our lives to consistently change at a moment's notice when the newest technology says we must.
Hmm.
And which speeds us up. So we are we're monochronic, meaning that we look at time as a commodity, basically. We look at time according to activity. We look at time as something that happens to us. You know, time is money.
Hmm.
Whereas that's not the majority of the world. The majority of the world tends to be polychronic, and they deal with time based on relationship to their environment, to the people in their families, to their customs and rituals, to their harvest and their reapings. Time has a different construct. When these cultures collide, monochronic and polychronic, you got some real interesting stuff happening.
You have a time war.
You have a time war. I show up for the appointment, but my fill-in-the-blank customer is keeping me waiting.
Right.
And they get there, and they seem to not be as apologetic as I think they should be. But they were taking care of grandma.
Right.
They were dropping, their sister off at school.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing what they had to do because of the priority that they place on time in their lives.
Right.
And so time is a very interesting construct. And out of it, and I'll just throw this out here for you, Eric, we even came up with the term CP time.
Uh-oh.
So
you might want to define that for our
basically, let me just say this, just to say it in a way that's understandable. CP time really refers to cultures that have a different outlook on time. They don't necessarily rush through life activity to activity. It's the polychronic people I was expressing earlier. A good way of saying CP time is communal potential time. Mm-hmm. Communal potential time. I know you thought I was going to say something else. But the reason it came up was because of the coming together of those two different types of people, monochronic, polychronic. And a lot of times it does come down to where's the power? Who has the power to determine how we look at time and how we use time? I even had to make sure that I was living my social life differently than my professional life, because if I kept up the pace that my professional life was requiring that I keep up, and I took that type of pace into my personal and social life, it explains why too many people have too many stress-related diseases.
Wow.
So as soon as I was diagnosed with high blood pressure, I had to look and see, how much did my concept of time and the way that I was using my time have to do with all this stress in my life? So it's just a thought. So that's chronemics. Then we have haptics. Haptics is the study of touching according to culture. And I think for you as a real estate professional, what is that handshake? What does it look like? You know, do I run into cultures where I should not put my hand forward? What if I'm dealing with cultures where, let's say, the left hand is forbidden in terms of touching someone or passing something to someone? These kinds of things we need to just kind of be abreast of when we're dealing with cultures that are different. in terms of the perspective they have around touching and what is appropriate or inappropriate. We, as United States enculturated people, we tend to be somewhere in the middle. We don't touch too much, but we do touch. There are cultures that don't touch at all. So when you meet your Japanese clients, you make a respectful bow.
That's right.
Or you may offer a handshake because they're used to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that haptics has a lot to do with how we engage and interact with our customers. And then lastly, now look, we've gone through appearance, paralanguage, kinesics, proxemics. Those are the four that I mainly highlighted, and then I just touched on chronemics, time, haptics, touching, and lastly, but not least, olfactory. It sounds like an old factory, but it's just one word, O-L, factory, and that is smell. And the fact that we are extremely smell conscious in the United States. This is one of the reasons why many real estate professionals dress their homes. You know, they'll go in and they'll make sure cookies have been baked, especially in new properties.
That's
cookies
right.
have been baked. Coffee is percolating.
Mm-hmm.
What else? They probably don't do incense, but they'll put some kind of fragrance because they don't want to do the incense because you don't want the people to think that, you know, there's something happening here that's not.
Right.
So they probably, but they'll have some kind of freshener in the environment.
Right.
Because smell is so important to us. We are probably the most sterile culture on the planet. We do not like body odor. We do not. We are constantly popping Tic Tacs or other mints because we want to be fresh in terms of our breath. We take hygiene very importantly. This sometimes can be a problem for some people that are coming from other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of real estate professionals that have brought their prowess from Nigeria, you know, from Spain, from England, from all over the Caribbean. And even though we all understand hygiene and take hygiene seriously in our cultures, it varies as to how much we consider smell a part of that.
Hmm.
So here in the United States, we do. We shrink wrap our food. If there wasn't a Panda Express or a Starbucks or a deli in most of our grocery stores, we wouldn't even know that we were in a place that they sell food.
Right.
But you go to the outdoor markets of Spain and South Africa and in the UK and other areas, and it's like, oh my gosh, look at this. Let's smells. You know, the smells just exalt themselves. It's interesting. Going back to the Oprah example. One of the first things she said was before we even got off the plane, we smelled India. And she spent a whole couple of minutes explaining what she meant by that. The curry, the spices, all of these smells were just, they were just in the air. They permeated everything. It takes some moment for the traveler to get used to it so that it doesn't throw you off. And we've had several people travel abroad and be caught on television remarking about the smell of a place because immediately they were assaulted with a smell and they just spoke, not realizing that maybe what they said might not have been complimentary of the culture.
Sure.
And pretty much said out of ignorance. They just couldn't wrap their minds around it. I expect to smell me wherever I go, to see me wherever I go, to experience me wherever I go. And in a very heterogeneous culture, such as the United States, meaning extremely multicultural, you have got to expect as you move from space to space, you're going to experience the different ways in which people deal with their environments concerning smell. You will walk into homes that smell like curry or that may even smell like kimchi or any number of things that we would say, woo, that's very pungent, that's so strong. Well, that's something that they're used to. And because you're not, it doesn't mean that it's right or it's wrong, it just means that it's different. So olfactory is something that we understand as real estate professionals. We want our environments. We want our cars. You know, we want our offices to invite people, and we know what that means for us. So I say nonverbal communication is culturally bound, and what we do is that we make sure that we honor those things that the culture has given rite of passage to, and that when we come into a relationship to differences that do exist within our environment, that we're open to them and that we can hopefully adjust in a manner that we can see this relationship through to success. So, in a nutshell, here we have nonverbal communication for the real estate professional, dealing with appearance, paralanguage, kinesics, chronemics, proxemics, haptics, olfactory, understanding that sometimes we contradict, we substitute, we complement, but we're always managing impressions and establishing relationships with our nonverbal communication, especially the visual and the vocal message. The beauty of it all is that it can all change, it can all be adjusted. We can be more of ourselves as we continue to, you know, just kind of like an onion. We layer ourselves. We become bigger. We become more of ourselves the more that we know about these things and the more that we can adjust in our individual environments.
So, P.S., how does a person, you know, come to know? I mean, some people don't know that they have a body odor. Some people don't know that their breath is really bad. Some people don't know that they're too loud or they're too close, or, you know, some people don't know that they are just not as, you know, dressed, appropriately dressed as they should be.
I know.
And, you know, what do you do when a person just doesn't know?
You tell them.
I guess where this is where coaching, I guess, comes into place, but they have to know that they even need a coach.
Right. You tell them. You do. But, you know, maybe you aren't the person to tell them, but somebody needs to tell them.
Right.
I have run into people that have certain body postures that they've adapted into, and it throws people off when they see them. I remember I had a client once whose head was slightly tilted to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe it was a spinal issue or something.
Sure.
But occasionally I would see them straighten up a little bit. So I eventually approached this client to say, let me ask you about your head posture. And they looked at me like I was crazy and was like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you do realize that your head is tilted to the side.
Okay.
And they're like, no. No, I don't. I said, you're kidding me, right? And it's like, no, I'm not kidding. What do you mean? And I was in shock. I was like, no one ever told you that this is your posture? And then I got out a mirror and I said, look. And they looked and they really couldn't see it. And I said, okay. And I actually held their head straight. I let it go. I held their head straight and I asked them, do you feel different? Kind of, and when I let go, it went back to where it was. It was a whole exercise that I had to go through with this person for a few sessions for them to even be aware that this was a posture that they were carrying around and that people obviously were relating to that posture, probably not in a way that he would have wanted them to relate. So I've had to tell people about body odor. I've had to advise some that have moved into the country from varying areas where hygiene is at the utmost, but they don't mask their smells. They don't mask them with things that we do, like Right Guard, Secret, you know, Eau de Cologne 42 or whatever it is that we're using. They don't do that, but they're clean.
Right.
But what happens is that the body odor starts to permeate the clothes.
Right.
And so what happened to this particular gentleman, he couldn't get a job. He was a PhD in his field, highly acclaimed in the work, well-published, all kinds, just wonder, very good command of the language, everything. But his clothes, which were highly fashionable and expensive, one of the people that were working with him said, I need your help on this. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to tell him. And I just pulled him aside and I said, listen, I need to talk to you about something that I think is sensitive, but let me explain to you why I'm telling you this.
Mm-hmm.
The United States has this particular cultural proclivity around smell. It means this for us. So this is what I need for you to do. And then he actually admitted that he had heard about it, heard about that before, that people had talked to him about it before. But he said it was in his clothes and no amount of dry cleaning could help. And so I told him point blank, I said, well, you know what? I'm sorry. It's time for a new wardrobe.
Wow.
Little bit by little bit, piece by piece, and you're going to have to start using these kinds of hygienic products.
Right.
You're going to have to start using these types of hygienic products because he was a very nice-looking man, very well-groomed.
Right.
I had no problem with him in terms of my proximity to him,
sure.
But I could understand why after a certain amount of time in a closed space with him,
mm-hmm.
that would be problematic.
Sure.
So the answer is you have to speak up. And I have been, as a professional, brought into many organizations and have been asked to speak about these sensitive issues as the HR departments should be able to do.
Right.
With individuals, because it's happening every day. All over the country, it's happening every day where people are getting complaints through HR about, well, this person, you know, smells like this, or this person is always invading my space,
right.
or this person is coming off this way with the way that they're, not notice, the way that they're talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these complaints, a lot of these EEO issues, actually come down to nonverbal communication. It's a misunderstanding of the way that people engage other people in terms of their nonverbal communication. It's a fascinating area. It's something that we really are behind the eight ball on, I think mainly because we've been so privileged for so long, you know, to be numero uno, everybody get with our program, that so few of us have learned additional languages, so few of us have traveled abroad, this type of thing. And again, we are who we are, the wonderful United States of America. Everybody wants to come. Everybody wants to be. But at the same time, we have a responsibility to become global citizens and understand that we're all here. You know, we're all here and we're all buying property.
Wow.
And so anyway, I know, fascinating.
It is. It is. And, you know, it helps me understand why certain cultures see us as arrogant or insensitive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's our way or the highway, you know.
Yeah.
And our style, how we view life, how we view time, you know, how we dress, how we smell. And if you're not
mm-hmm.
like us, then, you know, we don't. You don't have the value.
Mm-hmm.
You're not worthy of our time or of our relationship or
mm-hmm.
or even to do business.
And it's interesting because, you know, we all wear the mask. I remember Paul Laurence Dunbar, the famous poet, wrote a poem called We Wear the Mask. And it says that we wear the mask that grins and lies, and it hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. You know, we wear the mask. We all leave our homes every day with this nonverbal communication mask. And that mask is definitely predicated on how we feel about ourselves and how we see ourselves. Lest we forget, we're on the second step now.
Right.
We're gradually going up those steps, and the next step, bam, we're right there with one other person.
Right.
And I take myself wherever I go. You take you wherever you go.
Right.
So from my intrapersonal into my nonverbal habits of expression,
mm-hmm.
Touching, smell, and all of those things, now I go out and present myself to the clients. I present myself to my wife, my husband, my children, my family, my community. And now I'm ready to engage in communicating with another person, but not forgetting that I've brought myself to the table. All of that stuff in the well, that water in the well, all of the ways in which I seek to manage impressions, and sometimes, again, putting on that mask. You know, I've got that real estate mask, you know, that seller mask, that buyer mask, that teacher mask, that husband mask, that wife mask. We all wear masks. But the point is it live or is it Memorex? You know, are people really getting, you know, are they getting from you?
Right.
You know, is the authenticity of who you are, is that verbal and that nonverbal as congruent as it should be to sell one of the most precious commodities that we have in our nation, and that is property, you know, land.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's not making any more of it, that's for sure.
He's not making any more of it.
Yeah. Well, what a great lead into segment four, and I tell you, P.S., I'm so glad we are ending segment two, actually segment three.
Mm-hmm.
We just dealt with step two on the communication staircase, and yesterday was step one, and we began with the introduction, and that was the first segment. So today, folks, this is segment three, nonverbal communication, and it's Friday, and thank God we have the weekend to listen to segment two, which was step one, intrapersonal communication, and this show, step two, segment three, nonverbal communication. So we can listen again to these two shows and really take to heart everything PS is talking about. This has been really tremendous, educational, eye-opening, everything. I can't come up with enough adjectives to describe how great this information has been. And I'm looking forward to Monday, where we move into segment four, step three, interpersonal communication. And that's going to be exciting, folks. So please reach out to your friends, your fellow realtors, realtists, your neighbors, your teenage sons and daughters, and, you know, and maybe customers who are in the field of sales or some aspect of working directly with consumers. Everybody can benefit from this great information on communication. Thank you so much, P.S., for just another incredible segment today.
Thank you, and I'm excited about our next segment, that interpersonal communication. Now we're going to take everything that we learned in the intrapersonal and the nonverbal step, and we're going to talk about how do we engage others in a way that is impactful, inspiring, and gets results. I'm going to actually share a few things with your listening audience, but two of those things will be the different types of listening that we engage in and the seven basic ingredients of every single communication experience that you have had to date and will have all the way through your entire life cycle. There's seven basic ingredients that are working for you or working against you. They're working against you right now because you don't know them. But as of the next segment, you're going to know what they are and immediately be able to implement them.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, P.S. And folks, I really encourage you to tell others about this. Please remember, you can actually embed the radio player on your website. You can send the link out, put it on Facebook and LinkedIn and all the different social media sites that you're on, and let others know about this series that's going on right now on The Power Is Now, and have them listen to the last two calls. I promise they will thank you for that information. Well, this has been another great Power Is Now show, and I'm just excited to be here and to be a part of this. And I think I have, folks, the best seat in the house, no doubt about it. I'm getting educated, and I am really, really just thankful that P.S. is taking the time out of her busy schedule to share with me and the Power Is Now audience everything there is to know, I believe, just about everything there is to know about communication. Well, again, this is a wrap of The Power Is Now, and I have to tell you, folks, this show would not be possible without the support of my team, Erica Buster, VP of Communications, Jacob Navas, VP of Technology. You know, Jacob built the Power Is Now website. This guy really knows his stuff. He's involved in all the social media sites for the Power Is Now. Really want to encourage you to connect with us on The Power Is Now via Facebook and our website and LinkedIn and Active Rain. We're kind of all over the place, and it's just a great way to communicate with us and also to share the information with your fellow realtors and realtors. I want to encourage you to please participate with the Orange County Realtors. I'm the president of that chapter here in Orange County. As we put on events and provide information that we know can help you grow your business, I'm excited about the opportunities that are coming up to learn more about asset opportunities, selling REOs and short sales with Anna Gonzalez with U.S. Bank. She's a community affairs and loan relations manager for U.S. Bank, and she's going to be coming to us at National University on Friday, May 18, 2012, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and talking about the opportunities with U.S. Bank. And then Amelia Castro, who is the REO Asset Recovery Manager for Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, is going to be there as well. And then Adriana Galavis, who's a loan officer for U.S. Bank, is going to be talking about special programs for U.S. Bank REOs. And then we're going to be kicking off our Region 15 Conference with the Orange County Realtors Golf Classic. That's Wednesday, June 13th at the Bella Colina Town and Golf Club at 200 Avenida La Plata, San Clemente, California. It starts at 8 a.m. Please go to our website, ocrealtors.org, and register for this fantastic golfing event. It's a beautiful golf course. Individual golf sponsorship is $150, twosome, $300, foursome, $600. It's a great opportunity to network and to play a round of golf that I promise you will not regret. In addition, we've got great lunch planned, wonderful awards and prizes, and that's on June 13th. And then that leads us right into June 14th and 15th. Communicate to dominate the NARAB Regional 15 Conference. Drive your business to more profits and success. The Region 15 Conference presents Communicate to Build Your Investor Business. Rev up your revenue sources with property management. Add income from corporate and social services to dominate with your brand and social media. Increase REO and short sale commissions and many other topics. So please register for this event. All that information is on ocrealtors.org. ocrealtors.org. We really hope to see you at both the golf tournament and also the regional conference in June. Well, again, thank you so much for being a part of The Power Is Now. We hope to see you again on Monday as we begin this series, segment number 4, step number 3 on the communication staircase. Thank you all, and remember, we are at our best, and we maximize our success when we act now. What have you learned today that you can act on now? Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.